It's time to take the quiz.
5 questions, 5 minutes a day, 5 days a week.
Take the quiz every weekday at thequiz.fox and then listen to the quiz podcast to find out how you did.
Play, share, and of course, listen to the quiz at thequiz.fox.
One, a literal trial balloon from China. Two, when do you take on practical risk? When you set aside everything you know inside that is right and say, I don't care, I need to take this risk to get better. In other words, should the Mavericks trade or should anyone trade for Kyrie Irving? Three, Will Cain's State of the Union. It's the Will Cain Podcast on Fox News Podcast. What's up? And welcome to Monday. Welcome to a new week. As always, I hope you will download, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your audio entertainment, at Apple, Spotify, or at Fox News Podcast. Story number one, a literal trial balloon from China. News was reported late last week that a Chinese surveillance balloon flying at 60,000 feet was recorded entering U.S. airspace in Alaska, traversing over Canada, and entering the United States through Montana. This surveillance balloon traveled through the north central portion of the United States, through Montana, the corner of North Dakota, down through the Dakotas into Missouri before traversing the southeast and exiting across South Carolina into the Atlantic Ocean, where it was then and only then shot down by an Air Force F-22. What did this Chinese balloon see? Why was it allowed to fly over the United States of America? What did it transmit back to China? It's pretty odd to think about a literal hot air balloon being part of the arsenal of the 21st century when it comes to surveillance. But balloons are. My Fox and Friends Weekend co-host Pete Hegseth, who served in the United States Army, talked about balloons being used in theaters in Afghanistan and Iraq to get a bird's eye view of your adversary. It's just a little bit hard to imagine that we're still using hot air balloons in the age of satellites and drones. What more, one flying at 60,000 feet. Most of the time that these balloons are employed for surveillance purposes, they fly, reports are, between 80,000 and 120,000 feet above the ground. It's almost as though this balloon was designed to be seen. And it was seen with the naked eye by a reporter, a newspaper reporter, in Billings, Montana. Balloons are not only used in Afghanistan and Iraq, they're an archaic surveillance technology. It's been employed since, quite honestly, the Civil War. They were in high usage during World War I, but by the time we arrive at the 21st century, only $3 million, I believe, of the United States military budget's devoted, that we know of, to balloon surveillance. There is some push to increase that to $26 million in the coming year. But that's on a military and national defense budget in the billions. So what was China doing employing this archaic technology to, on the surface, surveil and perhaps deeper probe the U.S.? What was possible to surveil at 60,000 feet over Montana, North Dakota, Wyoming, the Dakotas? Well, this is, as many have pointed out, part of our national defense heartland. It's the center of our intercontinental ballistic missile nuclear silos at Air Force bases in Montana, North Dakota, and Wyoming. Once you arrive at Missouri, you're talking about the home of the B-2 bomber, stealth bomber. If this were designed to surveil, China was literally looking down upon global nuclear war. The ability of the United States of America to wage war across oceans, across a globe. It's still hard to imagine, although I'm sure you can get finer detail, and who knows the depth and quality of the surveillance technology attached to that balloon, but it's hard to imagine it provides you much deeper intelligence that's already provided through drone and satellite technology. But in my estimation, it should be absolutely a red flag warning as to what China is attempting to learn in anticipation of what here with the United States of America, but even more concerning about China's probe into our leadership and how we respond. That to me seems to be the deeper intelligence. We talked about it in last week's episode of the Will Cain podcast. There's an Air Force general who has said to his command post in a memo that we should prepare for war with China by 2025. That sentiment seems to have been echoed, at least to some extent, in China, where reports are President Xi has told his war command to prepare for an invasion of Taiwan by 2027. An invasion of Taiwan, everyone anticipates, is the global domino that results in a global war between the United States and China. But this trial balloon seems to me, less about something they surely already knew or had the capability of learning when it comes to our national defense capabilities, and more about the moving target of backbone that is American leadership. Why didn't the Biden administration, why didn't the Pentagon shoot down this Chinese surveillance balloon when it entered Alaska? Now, the reason that we are given is for safety precautions, that this balloon, the size of three school buses loaded with surveillance equipment, falling from 60,000 feet, would end up in a debris field of roughly 7 square miles, and that provided a threat to civilians on the ground. Not until it exited air ground space over the sea in South Carolina was it shot down. By the way, it did scatter over 7 square miles, reportedly 6 nautical miles off the coast of South Carolina in waters that are 47 feet deep. Already a perimeter has been made by naval and National Guard boats waiting for a salvage vessel to come in along with Navy divers to see what entered our airspace. But I don't buy that it was any safety risk flying over Alaska or Canada, no reports on the reaction from Justin Trudeau, or Montana, some of the least sparsely populated places in the United States of America. If this were a threat to national sovereignty, if it were a threat to intelligence, we could have and should have taken it down much earlier. Alternatively, the argument is made that we have the capability of blocking any signal transmission from the balloon back to China. Whatever surveillance it might be bringing in, we have the ability to block that from transmitting back to Chinese intelligence. And then therefore, we can let it fly as we learn from China, their habits, their techniques, their tactics, their strategy. I had on Brett Velikovich, a former intel analyst here in the United States of America, who said, I don't buy it. I don't buy the ability that we could have blocked that in a quarantined, trustworthy manner to know nothing was transmitting back to China. Nor did he buy the rationale that we had something to learn from the command and control of this balloon. So why did we allow it to fly? I think the answer to that question is partially the valuable intelligence or message being gained or sent from China. On one hand, it's a propaganda win. We can enter the United States. They can do nothing. They will do nothing to stop us. So if you're Taiwan, if you're whoever, don't feel strongly about the United States of America's ability or willingness to defend you. Prepare for 2027. What more, it reveals the willingness, the backbone of our leadership to stand up to a provocative action in the face of China. Look, there is a reasonable and rational and important conversation to be had about provocations from China when the leader of the United States of America is, or should be, and is in part, under investigation for potential corruption with China. There's a good segment of the American population that's turned this off. But that doesn't make it any less true. The president of the United States, there is evidence of dirty business dealings between his son and by extension him with foreign powers, including both Ukraine and China. If the Biden family is making money in China, how willing is the Biden family to stand up to China? You can take that as a logical puzzle and play it A and then B. We all understand the power of incentive. If Nike is making billions in China, how willing is Nike to stand up, or LeBron James for that matter, to stand up and say, free Hong Kong? We know the answer to that. If John Cena is making billions in China, how willing is he to stand up when asked about human rights abuses in China? We know the answer to that. We know the theoretical power of incentive, and we know the practical application when it comes to corrupting influences. It happens in celebrity. It happens in business. It happens in sports. It happens in fashion. Why would it not happen in politics? The A then B is understanding the power of incentive. Is there reason to believe that there has been corrupting influences inside of politics. First, from the macro level, absolutely, yes, we know that. We know Chinese money is rife throughout our culture and our political system. The Chinese are funding universities. They're funding Confucius centers across the country to embed Chinese philosophy and way of life and thought. We know they're funding political campaigns. We know they have funded the Biden think tank at the University of Pennsylvania. Are those not potential influence? Is that not potential corrupting influence on the American interest? And then the B, which everyone seems to think is conspiratorial or beyond the pale, is could those corrupting influences have impacted a decision like a hot air balloon violating international airspace? That's a very, not just worthy, but important question to answer. Perhaps more important is the probe of this balloon into American popular consciousness. Congressman Michael Waltz has called it a Sputnik moment. Sputnik, the famous Russian-Soviet mission to space that woke up the American public about the advances of the Soviet Union and ignited the space race, ultimately with the U.S. landing a man on the moon. We can talk till we're blue in the face about the influence of Chinese propaganda on American thought through pop culture and movies and music and the university system. We can talk about the black and white truth that everyone has a Chinese surveillance balloon on their phone in the form of TikTok. But nothing seems to hit home quite as viscerally, quite as visually, quite as literally as a balloon over Missouri. It commandeered the American airwaves from channel to channel. And maybe it wakes up the American public about the true nature of the relationship with China. It's not one simply of competition. It's not one simply that is adversarial, but it is one of belligerence, a zero-sum game that one party believes they must supplant the other for global dominance. That's not American xenophobia. That's understanding the battlefield and what your opponent believes. And if it takes a balloon to wake us up, to be our Sputnik moment, to reveal our leadership, to ask questions about corruption, to understand our relationship with China, if it takes a balloon, well, that's not a lot of hot air.
We'll be right back with more of the Will Cain Podcast.
Precise, personal, powerful. It's America's weather team in the palm of your hands. Get Fox weather updates throughout your busy day, every day. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Story number two. Kyrie Irving is a Maverick. Just a few hours before that news was announced on Sunday afternoon, I recorded this episode of the Will Cain Podcast. What you're going to hear in a few moments is my analysis yesterday before the trade. You'll get to see, am I consistent? Because now Kyrie Irving is a Maverick, and you get my real-time reaction. I'm hyped. I understand the risk. It's an insane amount of risk. Kyrie Irving, is he available for his team? Kyrie Irving, I'm going to sit out unless you trade me. Kyrie Irving, I won't take the vaccine, so I miss all of my home games as a Brooklyn Net. Kyrie Irving, I lose my sponsorships, and I'm suspended for retweeting a reported anti-Semitic film. Kyrie Irving. And yet, I'm hyped. Here's the bottom line. When you are the Dallas Mavericks and you have a generational talent like Luka Doncic, it is your burden, your responsibility to surround him with elite talent, championship-level talent. The Mavs making the Western Conference Finals a year ago are a testament to Luka. Yes, a good supporting cast, but not enough to truly win a championship. And that's been revealed this season. So they have to go all in as the Mavs have regressed. They have to find a way to get over the hump. Kyrie Irving is a depressed asset. As a basketball player, because of his off-court issues, he's cheaper than he would be if he did not have those issues. And that fits with the Mavericks because they don't have the assets needed to trade for a big-time superstar unless he is a depressed asset. This is a unique situation where the Mavericks need to take on this level of risk. Now, on the basketball court, I'm optimistic. It's better for Luka to have a secondary ball handler like Jalen Brunson. Gives him rest. He needs it. They both can play well off the ball. They should work. I don't buy this stuff about there's not enough balls for Luka and Kyrie to play together. Don't buy it. If it blows up, if Kyrie's a bad personality and he ruins the Mavs, well, guess what? He's not even signed past this season, which you could say, well, you just traded for a few months of a player. But a decent test out, a decent trial run, a decent trial balloon. If it doesn't work, the Mavs clear a ton of cap space.
I think Spencer Dinwiddie was a great player, a good teammate, a good Maverick. Dorian Finney-Smith was the quintessential teammate, the quintessential Maverick, and he will be missed. But you had to make this deal, and I don't think the Mavericks are done. I think they could go get Jay Crowder, another wing. But the point is, you go all in, you take the risk. The downside is it blows up, and you have cap space to go start again rebuilding with Luka. Your job is, A, keep Luka Doncic a Dallas Maverick. I don't think Kyrie will run him off. I think he signed off on Kyrie. And if it blows up, it'll be sayonara Kyrie. Job one, keep Luka Doncic. Job two, win a championship with Luka Doncic. I think trading for Kyrie opens up both of those possibilities, with or without Kyrie. Now, here's what I said yesterday. How much risk do you take on? Practical in sports and maybe in life to win. The Dallas Mavericks are stuck slightly above mediocrity. I haven't yet spent much time talking about the NBA, but like every other sport, I pay attention throughout the year. Luka Doncic is incredible, predictably, or perhaps beyond prediction, even greater than anticipated. Luka is setting scoring records every time you turn around, but the team is simply Luka. Different than a year ago, there's not a great supporting cast complementary to what this generational top five player in the NBA brings to Dallas. And you arrive at the coming NBA trade deadline saying, we have to do something, not just to win, but to keep Luka Doncic, to keep a top five player. The Dallas Mavericks aren't the only team wondering what I'm about to ask you, wondering about this risk tolerance in pursuit of a win as we approach the trade deadline. So are the LA Lakers. So are the LA Clippers. So are several other teams as they debate whether or not to trade for Kyrie Irving. Kyrie Irving is crazy. Kyrie may be a crazy genius, but Kyrie is crazy. And Kyrie has asked for a trade from the Brooklyn Nets. Kyrie Irving is one of the best players in the NBA over the past, what, 5 to 10 years. He's had his ups and downs as a Brooklyn Net. He would not get vaccinated and was prevented from playing in the city of New York for their home games. He has promoted films that have been described as anti-Semitic. He has declined to apologize. I believe he's now been dropped by Nike. He is mercurial. You cannot tell what kind of teammate is going to show up, if he will show up, but when he does, is great. I have throughout my career criticized Kyrie and complimented him, as I think it's appropriate to do with any individual, at various times. One time I described him as bringing a wheelbarrow full of bullshit out onto the set of First Take when he described his breakup with LeBron James. I've also lauded him for what is a sacrificial stand to preserve his bodily integrity and not taking the vaccine, the same as Aaron Rodgers or Novak Djokovic. But Kyrie is a risk, a huge risk. What kind of trade assets? What do you give up? What do you compromise by even bringing him in to your locker room? The answer is you take on that type of risk when you are desperate. Let me give you two teams that are desperate. One is my Dallas Mavericks. They have to surround Luka Doncic with something. The assets that they have to trade away are not great, and therefore they need to find in exchange a depressed asset. Kyrie Irving is a depressed asset. He's worth much more than the product on the court. With his product on the court, then he's going to command in a trade because of his behavior off the court. That's the exact type of gamble you have to take if you're in a situation like the Dallas Mavericks. I got to tell you, I think I would roll the dice. I think I would have to. I don't see a better path forward for the Mavs to surround Luka with talent without taking on that type of risk. And the other team is, quite honestly, the one where Kyrie caused drama once before, at least when it comes to LeBron James. It's the Los Angeles Lakers. Whatever it is about the Lakers, it just doesn't work. It doesn't work up to the sum is not as good as the total of its parts. Anthony Davis, LeBron James, Russell Westbrook. I mean, it seems weird to all of a sudden throw a Kyrie into the mechanics. But LeBron and Kyrie worked before for a while. LeBron, even though he's 38 and playing incredibly, is in the sunset of his career. He's going to need support, especially by the end of this season. I think the Lakers are also desperate. I think the type of team to take on that kind of risk. And I think in addition to the Dallas Mavericks, the other team that should go in on Kyrie Irving, and I could really probably regret saying this in both instances, I've been born out correct in being risk averse to these personality traits before, risky characters like Antonio Brown. I've always won. I've been right. Here I am saying you roll the dice for the Lakers and the Mavs because you're desperate when it comes to Kyrie Irving.
Don't go anywhere. More of the Will Cain podcast right after this.
Story number three. Tuesday, President Joe Biden will deliver his State of the Union. It will most likely not be truthful. It's going to be seen through a pair of glasses that would make John Connolly blush. Rose-colored glasses that doesn't reflect reality. I thought I would give you my State of the Union that reflects the reality of the United States of America. My State of the Union focuses on 5 points. 5 points of light or despair, but 5 points of reality for the U.S. Number one, we have to come to grips with our racial reckoning. We need to see the light morally, philosophically, and foundationally. That is the United States of America. Critical race theory is not simply being taught in law school. Critical race theory is an ideology that forces at the forefront the human being to see himself through the prism of identity. Where once we said, I want to be seen for my character, I want to be judged for my individuality, we now require of each other to see ourselves through the most shallow of prisms, through skin color or sexuality or vague concepts of gender. We seem to be nothing more than our identity. No bundle of virtues, no merit, no history of action. We are simply our identity. It's a cancerous poison on the spirit of America. And it's the antithesis of our founding. The United States of America was a unique experiment in human history, one founded through the Enlightenment and Renaissance, arriving in England with the formation of the Magna Carta, and finally being enshrined with the Constitution and Declaration of Independence of the United States of America in understanding the dignity and individual rights of the human being as an individual. We have to get back to understanding that fact so that we don't regress towards the story of humanity, which is tribalism, and once again aspiring to see each other as individuals. Abraham Lincoln once said that a house divided cannot stand. America, like a quickly multiplying cell inside the human body, is dividing and multiplying on an exponential level. We are in an almost real-time moment in history where we can see the American people dividing amongst themselves, dividing upon every line, and totally forgetting the one that unifies us as individuals, the tribe of Americanism. We've also divided ourselves from reality. Second, there has to be a national reckoning now with COVID. We have been peddled. We have been manipulated into, for the better part of 3 to 5 years, a false reality, not exclusively, but primarily driven by propaganda around COVID. We've been told lies about vaccines. We've been told lies about masks. We've been told lies about lockdowns. We've been told lies about the lethality of COVID. We have actually scared people into staying into their homes and only venturing forth with masks and gloves, wiping down what they eat with Lysol wipes. We have been created. We have been formed. We have been shaped. We have been manipulated into a false reality. We see it. We know it. We can see the story play out in the Twitter files, which gets no coverage from the major propaganda machine that is the vast majority of mainstream media. We see how our thoughts were regulated, who was turned down, who was turned up, what was turned off in the Twitter files. We don't know anymore, as a product of this, what is a woman. We are literally in a point in history where we cannot define, and people in all seriousness and earnestness, an attempt at empathy won't define something that is reality and true. What is a woman? By extension, you know what is scary? We can no longer define what is a man. We can't define what are the virtues, the embodiment, the behaviors that are expected of a man. And if we're that divorced from reality where we no longer morally know what is a man and no longer scientifically know what is a woman and no longer in practicality can ascertain reality, we're lost. We're not in the United States. We're in the Matrix. And we won't ever take the red pill, exit the Matrix, back into reality to save the United States of America until we have a reckoning on COVID. Number three, we can talk philosophically, and we should, because I truly think the problems that face America today are spiritual as much as they are economic, practical, everyday reality. But don't let us forget that for vast majority of us, politics is your pocketbook. Politics is your day. And politics has a practical application to the lives of people. Right now, people just don't buy, can't buy, don't have as much as they once did. Eggs, meat, gasoline, whatever it may be. Inflation is sitting at 6.5%. We're talking about, and that's come down a slight amount. But I spent some time this weekend on Fox and Friends talking to a panel of voters, one of which described herself as the working poor. You want to tell me about job numbers? You want to tell me about GDP? She tells me how she can't buy anything at the grocery store, how she can't feed her family. And the scary part of this is, in order to tame inflation, we're probably going to have to force ourselves into a recession in 2023. Interest rates are on the rise and don't know when they will slow, because we don't know when we can slow inflation. Once the recession takes in, then unemployment rises. The worst of all scenarios is, what if we have a recession, rising unemployment, and inflation? The state of the economy is precarious. Everyone you talk to, from the person on the street to actually the Wall Street financier, everyone feels like this economy is sitting on a razor's edge, that at any moment, it could fall. Point number four, international relations. We should begin every calculus when it comes to the U.S. dealing with a foreign power through the prism of one question. Does this serve America first? That's the only question that I've asked when it comes to Ukraine. It's not really about the moral clarity of one side versus the other. There isn't a lot of moral clarity in war, whether or not that be Russia or Ukraine. The question is, in what way and to what extent does it impact the United States of America? To take this full circle, that question cannot be removed from the potential corruption of the leaders of the United States of America. If it is true that the dysfunctional family is the Bidens, is one that took corrupt money from powers where we're now involved militarily, I'm skeptical the decisions being made serve America first. The same with China. I could talk about predictions of 2025 or 2027. I can even talk about China's invasion of Taiwan, but I think the case has to be made by American leaders were that to happen. And I know the argument. I know about semiconductors. But I want a rigorous debate. I want a rigorous analysis. I want every step of the way, and most importantly when it comes to war, to be asking the question, I'm going to sacrifice American lives? I'm going to sacrifice American treasure? I'm going to sacrifice American time? Does it serve America first? Almost invariably, when we elect a president based upon what he will do internationally in foreign affairs. Such is the nature of circumstance. You don't get to dictate what will happen. So we elect leaders based upon how they prepare and how they react. So here's one that I would like to see a leader focused on. Mexico. 250,000 encounters in the month of December. An absolute record at the southern border. We're sitting on a ticking time bomb. Oh, we've talked about the cultural changes of importing a city the size of Waco every month. Yes. But what about the terrorists, the people on the terror watch list? What happens when something happens inside the United States of America? Something horrific. We're going to look back on this time, on this moment, almost assuredly, at how they got into this country. We're going to say, how could we have let it go like this? How could we have let this flood into our country? What more? You want a bigger question? How are we going to deal with Mexico over the long term? Mexico can't do much to stop this. They're not doing anything to stop the drug cartels' involvement. They're not doing anything to stop the fentanyl coming into our country. Is Mexico a narco state? And if Mexico is a corrupt narco state, how can it be redeemed? You want to talk about serving the American interest? How about dealing with a corrupt narco state as our neighbor, much less what's happening in Eastern Europe? We're going to have to figure out, because it will impact America first, the future of our relationship with Mexico. While those 4 points are something that I would hope that an American leader could devote focus, I'll end on this fifth point. I think there is always hope. I'm not a pessimist. I'm truly not. And a lot of these points and a lot of conversation when it comes to politics and news often comes off as negative. I'm not a pessimist. I'm an optimist. I am an optimist, and I have hope for the United States for this reason. I believe in the people of the United States as individuals. I think you do too. When people are involved in their own lives, their own families, their own communities, they're so rarely liberal, progressive, conservative. They're simply members of their community. They're individuals that respond to their call by their conscience or their God. They step up for one another. America is the place of pioneers pushing west, of entrepreneurs starting new businesses, of risk tolerance. America is the place of cowboys and exploration, of vigorous, can-do individualism, rugged individualism of Theodore Roosevelt. You see it abstractly. You see it in our history books when told properly. You see it in your neighbor, and you see it in your own life choices. That is an unending well of hope. I think we should always hope to find the right leader, but I think we can even find more hope in being the right leader in our household, in our community, in our own life. That right there will always be, for me, it always has been, when I'm talking about entrepreneurship, small businesses, explorers, community, it's always been the source of what it means to be an American, and that is the source of hope. That's going to do it for me today here on this Monday. Coming up this week on the Will Cain Podcast, we'll be talking to Trey Gowdy and others as we prepare later this week for the Super Bowl. Let's go. I'll see you again next time. Thank you for listening to the Will Cain Podcast on the Fox News Podcast Network. For more of this podcast series, go to foxnewspodcast.com. Please rate and review this podcast wherever you download podcasts, because we want to hear what you think. Listen ad-free with a Fox News Podcast Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts and Amazon Prime members. You can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
Put the power of over 100 meteorologists and the worldwide resources of Fox in your hands with the Fox Weather Podcast. Precise, personal, powerful. Subscribe and listen now at foxnewspodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.